Alex Vitale, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you.
Alex Vitale teaches at the Brooklyn College in New York City's university system. He coordinates the Brooklyn College Policing and Social Justice Project. He wrote a magnificent book, The End of Policing, published in 2017. He's an engaged academic, lots of TV and radio interviews, does visits around the country, consulting with citizen police reform groups, and also talking with those police forces and some public officials who realize that modern policing is very harmful, even to the individual cops themselves. That is, policing has to change. He's coming to Portland in 12 days from today, speaking on October 11th and October 12th, discussing Imagine a World Without Policing. KBOO is sponsoring both talks, and you'll hear a lot more about it in the next close to 2 weeks. His book, The End of Policing, it became an instant classic because it synthesizes a really vast amount of material. It's completely accessible language description. It examines, it's exciting actually, and it's almost dramatic as it sort of makes its case. It examines the history of policing all the way to today. Their ranks greatly expanded today, but still doing their old job, containing the poor, cleansing the streets, disrupting labor and political challenge, sometimes killing people and getting away with it almost always. He critiques modern policing and all its functions, most of them with little to do with crime. Its chapters look one at a time at police operations and hassling the homeless and prosecuting a war on drugs, only, of course, in poor and black enclaves. Also arresting, sometimes killing people in mental health crises, and the police send them on their way, their journey to jail. In each chapter, he examines alternatives. He distinguishes those police reform alternatives that in reality operate to strengthen the current police system, distinguishes them from real, useful, often community-based helping programs. The End of Policing concludes pointing out that even the useful reforms, even altogether, they can't succeed if the U.S. remains so unequal, with so many people driven to desperation and despair, and others, of course, to illegal ways of making a living. With that in mind, he addresses how we can work, however, in the police reform movements, the ones that are really useful to advance the struggles for a more just and democratic society. Alex Vitale, it's really a wonderful book. But first, what's wrong with modern policing?
Well, I think we have a pretty good sense of what the major problems are. Over the last, 5 years with the rise of Black Lives Matter, we have a very good understanding about the excesses of police violence and the lack of accountability. I think what needs more attention is the broader problem of over-policing. So we focus so much on a handful of very high-profile injustices, but we sometimes lose track of the 10-plus million low-level arrests police make every year that really do almost nothing to make us safer, but that really just drive more poor people into the criminal justice system. So despite all the activism and upheaval of the last 5 years, I haven't seen a whole lot in the way of really meaningful changes to American policing. We've seen a few training programs here and a lot of rhetoric from police leaders, and yet police continue to be the tool that's used to manage the problems in poor communities, especially non-white ones.
Yeah, it's also vastly expensive, right, in so many ways. The prisons, the police, the whole rest of the system. That money could be used for something that would be much more socially productive.
Well, that's one of the main points of the book, is that the decision to turn social problems over to the police to manage is a political decision about budget priorities, but also about an ideology that says the problems that these communities experience are the result of individual and group moral failure that will only respond to punitive interventions. And the alternative to that, that they don't want to address, is the fact that these problems are generally the result of market failures, housing markets, job markets, and also the failure of government to provide any kind of social safety net. So as long as we continue to invest ourselves in or embrace this idea that police and jails and prisons are the solutions to our problems, we're undermining the arguments that say what we actually need is investments in communities and reforms to labor markets, et cetera.
Let's talk about the reforms. You do a lot of discussing of police reforms, some of which are really good, some of which, though, in fact, in reality, strengthen the police and do very little good.
Yeah, so I think it's crucial that we have a deeper understanding about what the nature of policing is before we start deciding on what kinds of interventions are going to reduce the burden of policing on communities. And I think too often people are caught up in a kind of liberal legal formalism that imagines that if the police just enforce the law more professionally and in a less biased way, with more community oversight, that this would fix the problem. So they invest in things like anti-bias training, community policing, civilian oversight boards, body cameras, but there's actually almost no empirical evidence to show that any of those interventions have any meaningful impact on the problems that police produce in communities. And that's because the institution of policing is typically the wrong tool to use to solve these community problems. And that when we use police to deal with drug overdoses, homelessness, mental health crises, failing schools, what we're doing is we're saying we want to turn those problems over to the forces of violence and coercion, which have always been rooted in a kind of racism. And the alternative has got to be to look to those reforms that don't try to just restore legitimacy and public trust to policing, but that actually move us away from using policing to manage problems. So, for example, in every city in the country, we have policing on demand to deal with drug problems, but in almost no place in this country do we have high-quality drug treatment on demand. And so we've got to shift the conversation away from giving the police more training, more resources, more professionalization to why are we using police to solve these problems.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO 90.7, Portland, Oregon, talking to Alex Vitale, who wrote the wonderful, accessible, exciting, actually profound book, The End of Policing. We've so far discussed how today's policing creates great harm, particularly for the poor, at vast expense. And he discussed alternatives to policing in dealing with mental health crises and drug abuse. Some of the reform alternatives that turn out to do not much. But Alex, you talk about also some reforms that you think are valuable, like, let's say, drug courts, which really, to some extent, if they're done right, operate like social service agencies that first evaluate the problem and then provide help to people to, in fact, escape the thing that they really do want to escape in almost all cases, the drug addiction. And you do support those programs, is my sense.
Well, there is some criticism of those programs in the book. That by placing things like mental health services and drug treatment services in the correctional system of courts, with backed up by threats of incarceration, this is actually often counterproductive. So we don't want that people end up with access to services only because they've been arrested by police. So instead of emphasizing the provision of services through courts or initiated by police contacts, why can't we just have high quality drug treatment on demand? Because there are a lot of people who would want to access that who don't have an easy way to do so. And also, we need to have robust harm reduction strategies in place to help save lives, stabilize people so that maybe they're in a better position to look for these kinds of drug treatment services that might make a more substantial improvement in their lives.
Right. Let me use another example. Drug courts was not a very good one, I agree. I read an article by you, not by you, by somebody else who quotes you in the Gotham Gazette some years ago, I think, that announced the opening or the establishment of a career center for people just released from jail so they can get jobs and get integrated into the community, which is a nice thing. But in your interview, you point out, well, it is a nice thing, but if in fact we don't create jobs for all, What the career centers become is just a helping device for a few people who happen to walk in the door. So people who get connections in this, who have connections in this society, get better jobs, even if they've made a lot of mistakes in their lives. And connections count. But for the great majority who don't have connections and who don't get into these very few sort of career centers, they don't get jobs. And as long as we have a society whose policies are to maintain unemployment and who have now abolished most public employment programs, even in periods of deep recession, that kind of program that the mayors talk about and the police even like, it doesn't make any difference at all, except it just promotes the idea that they're really concerned and are doing something about the welfare of ordinary people.
Well, they're doing a few things, right? One is that they're promoting that false sense that they're doing something, but also they're promoting the ideology of personal responsibility so that they frame this question of unemployment as one of personal failure, so that it's not that labor markets are organized badly. It's not that there's discrimination. It's that you didn't do what you were supposed to do to get a job. And by creating these kinds of training programs or job pipelines as part of reentry programs, if you don't actually increase the number of jobs, you're just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, so to speak. So what we've got to have is actual economic development programming that's about creating new jobs, not just rearranging who gets the jobs that already exist.
This is Bill Resnick for The Old Mole talking to Alex Vitale. We're about ready to conclude. One final issue. In the book, you do accept the decent intentions of people, of most people in some in those programs like citizen review boards and creating jobs and helping reentry and all the rest of the stuff that people do. To those people, you say, look, these things are okay, but we really have to work to make this a more fair and just society where people can look forward to good lives and a society that doesn't destitute 20% of the people and drive them to desperation and into work that's defined as illegal, and another 40%, in fact, who experience enormous precarity and sometimes fall into desperation as a result. Unless we change that, we're not going to get very far. But what is your suggestion to those people who are honestly sort of nice liberals who want to do something and who may really agree with that analysis? How do you suggest that they work in their programs to advance that larger agenda?
To me, the most exciting organizing that's going on across the country right now are places where people are working at the neighborhood level to identify non-police, non-criminal justice solutions to the very real problems that their communities experience, whether it's drug overdoses or youth violence or people experiencing mental health crises or domestic violence. And they're coming together to try to figure out what would make their community stronger and safer, and then demanding that government provide the kind of services that will do that, and pointing out the ways in which policing is not part of the solution and how we should be shifting resources from policing and jails and youth facilities to really creating neighborhood safety at the direction of local residents. So I encourage groups to look in their own communities at what the kinds of problems are that are generating police responses and articulating what you would really like to see. Why can't we have adequate community-based mental health services so that I don't have to call the police? Why can't we have safe injection facilities? Why can't we have community-based anti-violence initiatives in our community? These are the things that will make us safer without criminalizing young people in the community.
Alex Vitale, I'm really looking forward to your coming to Portland October 11th and October 12th. You're one of those at Portland State University. Imagining a World Without Policing is your topic. I know you'll be meeting with many of the police reform groups in the city. Thanks so much for talking to us.
I look forward to seeing you in a few days.
Right. So long.
Bye.
in the big Rock Candy Mountains. All the cops have wooden legs, and the bulldogs all have rubber teeth, and the hens lay soft-boiled eggs. The farmer's trees are full of fruit, and the barns are full of hay. Oh, I'm bound to go where there ain't no snow, where the rain don't fall, the wind don't blow, in the big Rock Candy Mountains. In the big Rock Candy Mountains, the jails are made of tin, and you can walk right out again as soon as you are in. There ain't no short-handled shovels, no axes, saws, or picks. I'm a-goin' to stay where you sleep all day, where they hung the Turk that invented work, in the big Rock Candy Mountains. I'll see you all this coming fall in the big Rock Candy Mountains.